listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Tennis.com podcast. Steve Tigner and I back 2 weeks since our last chat. That was, of course, after the Australian Open. And since then, you have really, I think, a mix of everything that's taken place. You have Fed Cup, Davis Cup. You have some notable results in the men's side. WTA really kind of hitting its stride at this point, going into some important February events. Maybe we should get the ugly out of the way first, I suppose. And, you know, this is also being a day where Doug Adler comes at ESPN for his, remark, whether it was meant to say anything on TV. You know, we had another major faux pas that happened, you know, during the U.S. Fed Cup tie in Hawaii, where the national anthem for Germany was not played correctly. It was instead played from Nazi era times, one of the opening verses of it, and it really put a cloud on this entire tie. I actually watched quite a bit of this on TV, and this story never really went away. It got picked up well beyond tennis circles too, and that's, you know, as much as, you know, the tennis community, we have, you know, we sort of assess what's a big story. It's really when you see something like this where it gets picked up well beyond that, you know, it's a huge deal.
Yeah, tennis is making headlines in the wrong ways right now. Seems like when it comes to mainstream, you know, mainstream media, that's the only way it can make a headline. Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you'd say what percentage of people in the United States knew that about the German anthem, but on the other hand, you know, that's somebody's job to make sure those things are done right. And you're right, it did overshadow really the whole tie, which is unfortunate because the U.S. won basically won its first Fed Cup tie without the Williams sisters in years, and you know it ended well for the U.S. They advance, and also you got to see a little more of Coco Vandeweghe, somebody who did well at the Australian Open, had somewhat of a breakthrough there. I feel like other U.S. players have had breakthroughs, almost exactly the same breakthrough. Sloane Stephens and Madison Keys both made the semis at the Australian Open, and they continue to do well, but not that well. And you sort of wonder what, you know, how far is Coco going to take this? And this was, her performance here, I think, was a good sign, playing wise, at least.
Yeah, that's that was really, you know, one of the reasons I was watching is because of Vandeweghe and what we saw in Melbourne. And you're right, we've had surges from, and it's amazing that they've all come at the Australian Open for the most part, from Keys, from Sloane Stephens, from Vandeweghe. And I think we're still waiting for one of them to kind of double down on that, make it into something more than a moment, make it into something that will, you know, end a lot of talk about kind of, you know, maybe finding that torchbearer for the U.S. women going forward. And Vandeweghe did so against Andra Pekovic, most notably in the tie clinching match. She actually won the last 10 games of it, despite taking some medical timeouts. She's clearly, I think, for her sort of the way she presents herself attitude-wise on the court, you know, when she talks in interviews after. I think she's certainly both a talented and a divisive figure. I think she's pretty polarizing to fans. I think that's, you know, not a bad thing. I think there's a lot of potential interest that she may be able to capitalize on depending on her play. It's still early in a sense, although with Vandeweghe, you know, she is 25 years old. She's not in this very young crop of U.S. players, sort of like you see on the men's side. You know, they are extremely young, really just getting on the tour. Vandeweghe's been around a while, and you know, I don't know how much we really got into her performance at the Aussie and just in general during that Aussie podcast, because so much was fixed on the two finals. But I mean, did you really see this sort of coming from her, or even the potential to do so, based on what we, you know, the body of work she's put forth in the last, you know, 3-4 years of her career?
Probably not the semis of the Australian Open. No, definitely the game has always been there. That the serve, the forehand, there's sort of about as good, about as powerful as any on the women's tour. She just didn't seem to have the consistency, you know, on the backhand side, and just from match to match, to put together a run like that. I think, you know, if everything broke right, you always thought she had the talent for it. But you're right. She is polarizing, and if you go by Twitter feed, she rubs people the wrong way. But at the same time, winning wise, playing wise, results wise, maybe that's what you need. Somebody like that who's not afraid, you know, obviously not really afraid of any opponent.
Yeah, and I think that's safe to say with her. You know, you're going to get that in her matches there. It'll be interesting to see how the U.S. actually plays and their new, you know, Fed Cup captain, Cathy Rinaldi, how they end up playing this semifinal tie, which will be April 22 and 23. This is kind of in the heart of the red clay season at this point. The U.S. will host the Czech Republic. Czech Republic has turned into something of a dynasty in Fed Cup, you know, with their players, with Strixova, Pliskova. You have, you know, Kvitova, obviously, in prior years. They've really all committed to the cause pretty, you know, universally, and have really, you know, ran with this competition for quite a few years now. I almost want to say it's five or six titles recently. U.S. will host them. You wonder where they play that, also who they field for it, if they try to get, you know, the Williamses, or if this is, I mean, this to me, a Fed Cup is kind of the ideal opportunity to sort of build the next crop of players you could see playing in this competition for a while. So I think the U.S. will have quite a bit to think about in terms of who they want to play, and, you know, against that opponent there. The other semifinal will be Belarus and Switzerland. And yes, as the obligatory mention, we're already into the semifinal round of Fed Cup.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting what surface they choose. The U.S. would almost never choose clay, but maybe they would this time with a player like Pliskova. I think Kvitova won't be there, so that'll help. I mean, otherwise it would be a really tough ask to beat the Czechs, who, like you said, are a Fed Cup dynasty and who love it, love to play it probably more than any other country at the moment. But yeah, do you have Coco and maybe Madison Keys on clay? Is that, you know, that could be a winning combination.
Yeah, and I think it's a good time also to mention Davis Cup, because we, you know, that was the prior week, but U.S. also advances there. Not a surprise, given the, you know, the D-League squad Switzerland fielded in the U.S. There's no Stan, no Roger, you know, no Mark Rosé, no nobody that could have posed any threat to a pretty talented U.S. team. This is really the U.S. team that's completely now turned over from the old Roddick, Blake, Bryans, even, you know, the Query days too. You know, you have still the Isner, but you have Steve Johnson, and it's a different. It was a different team here. And looking at this, they sweep the Swiss 5-0. Jack Sock, of course, as well. Query still on this team. I apologize for that. They will go to Australia for that tie. It's a very strong quarterfinal round in Davis Cup. If all the players, top players, play, you'll have France against Britain, and Serbia, Spain. That's clearly the potentially the largest one, depending on, you know, what Nadal and Djokovic want to do. I think it's very early to kind of forecast those things, but, you know, any sort of, you know, parting shot from the round that was in Davis Cup?
I think, yeah, you have to look at Serbia as having a strong first-round win. Djokovic didn't look particularly good, but he won and they got through. And now he'll probably, I would guess that he would play in Serbia against Spain. And, you know, I'm not sure Rafa goes to that one. So maybe Serbia gets through there. Great Britain and France is a good one. We know France has depth. That'll be in France, probably on clay. I get, you know, the big question there is obviously, does Andy Murray play that in the heart of the season? And then the U.S., Australia. The U.S. went down to Australia last year and won, but basically with the same team. You know, does Kyrgios and Tomic play? I think we're pretty sure the U.S. will have its best guys down there on grass. So, you know, that's also interesting. I guess it just comes, you know, you just never know with Davis Cup who's going to be there in the middle of the season, who's going to be committed and take the time to go on to a road tie. I guess that'll be, you know, that's the big question.
Yeah, I should mention this is a very open top half of the straw for whomever does want to show up and kind of put the chips in for their country here. U.S., Australia, and the winner that plays Italy versus Belgium. Italy taking out the defending champion Argentina, who also did not field anywhere near their top squad, as is really how it tends to be in Davis Cup. France, Britain, Serbia, Spain, all in the bottom half. So, you know, potentially kind of a really open opportunity there for a few nations there. And, you know, looking at, you know, staying with the men for a moment, and, you know, there's been more on the tour since the Australian Open for the men. I don't think you would have, you know, from a 30,000 feet level, think of, you know, why is, you know, a Sofia event, the 250 event in Bulgaria, really worth, you know, so much to Grigor Dimitrov? Or, you know, when you look at the draw in Montpellier in France, you know, just loaded, this is to the gills with, you know, the French men's, you know, players that you expect to see there. But Alexander Zverev comes through that draw. These two events, we took certainly more away from them than you would have expected for 250s that appear right after a major. But, you know, for Dimitrov, for Zverev, and you've written about this, you know, I think these are very good signs that what we've seen from them in January, and really some of the projections some of us have had for them, you know, this might be the beginning of really, you know, top 10 level years for these two.
Yeah, I think you have to look at Dimitrov as, you know, his win in Sofia, which was a big one for him because it was at home. You know, he was in tears afterwards. That's not uncommon for him. But this was obviously a big win. It was packed the whole week. It, you know, it was a sort of on the Basel comes to Federer model, which seems to work well as long as the top guys stays in the tournament. But you have to look at that as, you know, that win as significant for this season, and then Zverev's win in Montpellier as significant, you know, for the future. I think Dimitrov's 6 years older. He was, you know, 5 years ago, he was in Zverev's position, and he didn't really, he got to this point where he is now in 2014, semifinals at Wimbledon, almost pushed Djokovic to a fifth set, and then, you know, that was as far as he got, and now he's back to that stage. I like the way he's winning now. It's not just purely on his talent or his, you know, he's winning by adjusting in matches. Today he lost the first set to Misha Zverev, you know, who's a tough matchup for him, a lefty serve and volleyer, but Dimitrov stayed with it, eventually won in three sets. That was what he was doing in Australia, winning, you know, coming, you know, winning four setters after losing the first set. He did that a few times. I don't feel like that's something we saw from Dimitrov in the past, that ability to just stay with it, adjust, win a match that maybe you don't feel like you're going to win at the beginning.
Is he winning potentially, you know, quicker points in a way too? I think that's always a thing that sort of simplifying the you know, playing to strengths a little bit more. I think he's actually always had something of an underrated serve. And, you know, he in the past, as you say, you know, he's had a tendency to sort of, you know, retreat a little bit, play that more stylistic game that hasn't always translated into the wins that we've expected. Has he from a strategy point even kind of just really reined things in and started fresh?
Yeah, it seems like he's finding his forehand more, using his serve, you know, to set up his forehand more. His backhand has been better. You know, I think there's just, I don't know if that's a big strategic difference. It just seems like he has more confidence in the you know, in winning these matches. That said, he almost blew a 5-love lead in the second set to Goffin. He was broken twice, once from 40-love up, and he had to break Goffin in the final game to win that set. And during that set, some of the old problems came up. He double faulted his backhand, kind of lost his backhand. So, you know, those old issues still exist. They never go away. So, you know, so we'll see how Dimitrov handles that.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, a name, of course, too, is Zverev. He also, you know, he also won the doubles title. It should be mentioned in that week there. I just think we're seeing, you know, quite honestly, I don't want to, there's no need to make comparisons, but I'm just thinking about where, you know, It just seems the inevitable breakthrough for Zverev at a slam this year, I think, is looking more and more likely here. I think, you know, what we saw, he's already, you could say what you want about Hopman Cup beating Roger Federer, still there, has to give you some confidence. He did so, I think, in 3 tiebreakers. He, you know, he goes toe-to-toe with Nadal at the Australian, and it's, I guess what we'll want to see about Zverev, you know, is really not even just the continuous sort of improvement of the game. Want to see kind of how he ends up scheduling. I think that's been a huge thing with younger players on tour recently. Dominic Thiem being, you know, a great example of that. I mean, what does Zverev kind of want to pick his spots a little bit more? Is and should he already be kind of moving into that mode? It'll be, you know, I think too with him, it's his potential for really success on all courts is what appeals to me a lot about him as well. And with, you know, I think with that kind of backhand, you can expect that. So I don't think, you know, for him either, it's a thing where we're kind of limiting him to progress on, you know, a few months of the year on one surface. I think that's really the exciting thing about Zverev, and I think just, you know, you can really just see it from watching him. I think in the end, a lot of this, I think to me, it sometimes just comes down to the eye test, and what we've seen from him so far this year has been really, really good.
Yeah, I think from, you know, the development of the last 3 years, when we first saw him in the U.S., really in 2015 when he was 17, he looked to me like he was going to be the next John McEnroe, a hothead, sort of a petulant kid. He's reined that in quickly, you know, more, you know, it still comes out a little bit, but he's improved that in pretty quickly. By the time he's 19, he seems more mature on the court already. As far as his game, he really, you know, if he does go on to become number one, you can kind of look at him as the next stage in the evolution of tennis. You can't say it yet because obviously he hasn't gotten there, but the potential is there. In a guy who's 6'6" and really plays like a guy who's 6'2". You don't really feel like I'm watching an especially tall player like you do when you watch Berdych run around. Zverev is, you know, very much smoother. He can, you know, he uses that height from way back in the court to hit winners. He's got a serve that really will bail him out, you know, all that stuff that you need. And, you know, and he moves better than I think any of the guys that we've seen who are 6'6". As far as his playing schedule, I think when you're 19, you definitely feel like you can play as much as you want. He's ranked 18th. He probably wants to get into the top 16 seeds, get points, you know, be seated in the top 16 at a Grand Slam. That's probably the goal for now. I think you do have to, you know, once he establishes himself like that, then you start to look at his schedule. Is he overscheduling like somebody like Dominic Thiem? I don't get that feeling from Zverev. I feel like he's got a good group with him that knows that, that really does know what they're doing. His family, he didn't over celebrate at the end of this win. I like the way he kind of kept it under control. There was there he had won a couple really good tough three set matches, one against Tsonga that easily could have lost and been satisfied with. I think the next step for him is winning 3 out of 5 set matches. He hasn't been hasn't shown that he's been that strong in Grand Slams in the longer in you know the 3 out of 5s that it takes to win those. He had his chances against Nadal, but he hasn't done as much in those events. So that you know that's kind of the next stage. But I thought this tournament was good for him in that he won tough 3-set matches.
Yeah, and he did so as a as I mentioned, kind of in an enemy territory in a sense too. I mean, against really the musketeers of French tennis there. So I want to close just by looking at really the WTA in a sense, and they this week in Doha, next week in Dubai. These are very well attended events field wise. Very good prize money as well to correspond to that. You will not see Serena Williams. I believe her next event is not till Indian Wells. It gives Angelique Kerber, from what I can tell, not that I've confirmed this, but if she put together 2 very good events, it's likely that she could get back into number one. She's only 600 and about 50 points behind Serena. I guess I have sort of 2 questions is, and I think we may have answered these in a sense, in one of your previews to Doha, despite all that, even if Serena was in the field, what do these events really tell us, if anything, given that they will be kind of forgotten almost instantly once the hard courts move back to North America and that these are not slams, and given all of, obviously, some of the incentive for players to go there. And, the second part is really about Kerber herself. Does this really, what sort of take the temperature on her, where things kind of have gone ever since, 2016 came to an end?
Yeah, I think, these tournaments, Kerber could potentially get back to number one or put herself in position there. And probably more important was that she just, kind of turned this early part of the season around. Obviously she's been flat to start this season. But I would be surprised if she does. I feel like she has her period. She went through one last spring where she may have lost 5 straight first round matches, but then she was back for the Wimbledon final and won the U.S. Open and finished number one. Anyway, it's a long season. And it really doesn't start as far as significance goes until Indian Wells. It's hard to really, the one thing you sort of remember from Doha and Dubai in the past few years is all the upsets. So you would sort of anticipate that. And I wouldn't be surprised if Kerber, loses early at these events. And I wouldn't say that that's all that troubling. There'll be more, she'll get on more rolls and more ups and downs through this year. So in that sense, this is almost, it'll be interesting to see what happens, but I wouldn't call these tournaments essential for her to get back, to immediately get back on track.
Yeah. And it's, I think overall this is great. This is good theater for the week, the 2 weeks that'll happen here, and certainly some of the best tennis that we will see in February. But it's got, it has its inherent self-contained space, and it should be remembered that way. So nonetheless, we'll discuss it and we'll watch it, and because that's what we do here on the tennis.com podcast. We'll be back next week, Steve and I, to talk more and look ahead again as February moves on both tours. Thank you for listening, as always, to the tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying the tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to tennis.com.